Welcome to Shakespeare FC, The Words, a 5-minute journey into the individual bits of language that were forged, fletched, hewn, and hammered, and sometimes crowbarred, into existence by our brilliant and witty Warwickshirean wordsmith, or, as you become more familiar, Uncle Will. I'm your host, Kari Marshall. There is something that is stirring within my bosom, something that can be attached to anger, coupled with curiosity, inclined to interest, and stapled to suspicions. So, what is the word that binds two noble kinsmen and the second part of William's Henry VI? A word that can be neutral or naughty. Have I piqued your interest? Or should I ask, is your curiosity aroused? Yes, it is in around 1591 that our fair uncle turned to finishing his second part of his Henry VI, where, perhaps, stirred from slumber to write the demise of the Earl of Suffolk, a weary William sets down to his writing desk and pokes his pen into the peacefully placid letter A, and in one fell stroke, violently and unceremoniously slaps it on the front of Rouse, and gives us a Rouse. The play so far. Suffolk arranges for King Henry's marriage to Margaret of Anjou, in which he secretly surrendered English lands to France. However, he plans to control the court through Margaret, with whom he is rather smitten with. In an effort to consolidate his power, he orchestrates the arrest and murder of Gloucester, Henry's Lord Protector, after which Suffolk is banished and Henry sails into exile, where he is then captured by English sailors, which is where we find him at the opening of Act 4.
The gaudy, blabbing, and remorseful day is crept into the bosom of the sea. And now loud howling wolves arouse the jades that drag the tragic melancholy night, who with their drowsy, slow, and flagging wings clip dead men's graves, and from their misty jaws...
Now, as you can well imagine, arouse does indeed come from rouse, which comes from the Middle English rousen, possibly deriving from the Norse rousa, meaning to shake, which is how William uses it here, with loud howling wolves waking from the sleep the jades, which were the mythological beasts that drew the chariot of night across the sky. And William would inexplicably wait some 20 years before he would be sufficiently aroused again to use it in his two noble kinsmen. And for a fair time, arouse would be used in this traditional sense of to shake or to stir from slumber, and would continue its evolution on to provoke, emotionally awaken, or stir into action, preached from the pulpit or professed in political persuasion. But now, on to the promiscuous pachyderm in the boudoir, or the elephant in the bedroom, if you prefer. Now, many of you will know that our fair uncle does have a bit of a bawdy streak. One only has to listen to the ravings of the porter in the Scottish play. But strangely, the more primal meaning of this word, arouse, would take a more feminine hand to move it from the battlements to the bedroom. It, however, did have to wait a fair few years until that fateful storm-lashed night in 1819 on the shores of Lake Geneva, where young Mary Shelley, fresh from metaphysical musings and shenanigans with her husband and Lord Byron, was roused to use arouse in her tale of lightning and loss, creatures and carnage, and a doctor with delusions of deityhood. Her tale that would arouse fear and dread in the readers of Frankenstein. Now from there, we must step or slip into the corseted emotional constraint of Charlotte Bronte's 1847 Jane Eyre, where emotions, though restrained, are aroused with such slow burning intensity, the book should have come with a fan and a fainting couch. And so we arouse from sleep to action with aroused purpose and, if you're lucky, aroused desire, which, come to think of it, kind of arouses my suspicion. Well, alas and alack, my friends, that is all we have time for. Join us again next time for another hopefully informative journey into the mind of Uncle William. I'm Kari Marshall. Farewell until next time.
Shakespeare Full Circle is a production of WGTE Public Media and is sponsored in part by the generous support of the Cowie Family Charitable Trust and Michelle and Kelvin McElwain. All previous episodes are available at wgte.org/sfc and wherever you get your podcasts.